Hey, it's Tuesday, October 9th, and this is Beginner's Puck, the podcast for hockey fans both new and old. Hey, Erica.
Hey, Deb.
I have a perfect idea for us.
Ooh, do tell.
We should hire ourselves out to any hockey club that wants to get things going.
Okay. Going okay. How?
See, here's what I'm thinking. So when we recorded last month, we opened up by saying, wow, it's been a really dull summer. Not much has happened.
That's right. Nothing is happening in hockey. That was our last episode.
Nothing is happening in hockey. There's all these kind of contracts floating out there that have yet to be signed. Who knows? It was really a dull summer. And then,
bam.
Bam. As soon as we dropped our episode, things started happening.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Seguin got signed. Carlson got traded. Steve Yzerman announced he's leaving Tampa, left and is just acting in an advisor. Like, what even happened that week? It was insane. So here's what I'm thinking. We did this. Mm-hmm. So I think we should maybe go to Toronto. If we go up there and say, you know, not much is happening, maybe they can get a Nylander deal.
Considering how I feel about Toronto as a rival team in Canada, I don't want to help.
Oh, I don't know. It seems to be the biggest story that's eating up Toronto media right now.
That's true. Actually, yeah, you're right. Maybe if we do that, they'll shut up about it. So I'm in.
Stop talking. Yeah. And that was kind of a, for anybody who is not clued into this, or who's not in Canada and has to listen to Toronto hockey media talk, William Nylander is, I think, currently the only restricted free agent who is not signed. Everybody said, oh, he'll be signed by the end of training camp. Nope.
Uh-uh.
Everybody said he'll be signed by the beginning of the season. Nope. Now nobody knows. But Shanahan, who is the, what is his position? Ooh. Brendan Shanahan with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I don't remember what his title is.
I don't know. He's not the whatever. But anyway,
yeah,
Brendan
Kyle
Shanahan.
Dubas is the guy I always see talking.
Right,
so
yeah.
When Shanahan Brendan says Shanahan. Something, I get confused.
Yeah, Brendan Shanahan basically came out a few weeks ago and said, you know, back in my day, because he played for the Detroit Red Wings, you know, we all took a hometown discount in order to like keep the team together. And we only want people here who are going to be, want to be Maple Leafs because we're something special. And I'm thinking, dude, you haven't won anything yet. and, you know, if all these really good, talented young players want to play together, they're going to have to take less money. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay. You keep thinking that. So now it's, public perception is Nylander's too greedy. It's terrible. It's really been terrible because honestly, as we talked about this so many times, I am always pro player on these situations because the team will not hesitate to kick you to the curb if things aren't going your way. So you got to protect yourself.
Yep, absolutely.
And we've talked about Nylander before, so I'm done talking about that. But nobody else is in Toronto.
He's even in a commercial. I don't know if you guys have gotten the commercial. And it's one of those sad things where I don't remember what the commercial is for. I just remember the commercial. It's got Nylander and Johnny Gaudreau and somebody else, another, you know, player.
Oh,
it's
some energy drink or something, isn't it?
Well, I don't think it's an energy drink because it's like the coach is they all have green glasses of stuff. And the coach is saying, oh, good for you drinking your kale, wheatgrass, hippy dippy, blah, blah, pregame drink. And then the camera turns and you see three old players or ex-players who are sitting at a table, like just shoving spaghetti and meatballs in their mouths. And one of them goes, don't you guys carbo load anymore? And like the kicker to the commercial is hockey has changed. So something, something. And I don't remember what it's advertising, but just the fact that it was Nylander sitting there, I was just like, I wonder what's actually going to happen with him.
Hmm. Yeah, I remember that played during their opening game. Like that was a commercial that played during the Toronto's opener.
Yep. It also makes me laugh because Johnny Gaudreau has said in interviews that he, in terms of like diet, he eats like hot dogs and macaroni and cheese and like chicken nuggets and stuff and like not vegetables. So I was like,
he eats like a 12-year-old.
Right. So I can't see him drinking that that particular green drink that they had in that commercial. So yeah, really. I doubly laughed.
I don't think he knows what a fruit or a vegetable is. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is kind of ironic. It's also ironic that they both have the same agent, Nylander and Gaudreau. And Gaudreau went through a similar situation, was it last year, holding out and didn't start the season because he also didn't have a contract. Hijinks. I don't know. We'll see what happens. People are saying trade him. It's hard because, you know, I would be so resentful as a player knowing that I took less money so they could give more money to, like, the other guys. And they're already talking about, you know, the truckloads of cash they're going to give Austin Matthews. And now Mitch Marner is looking to be right up there as well because his play has been, you know, phenomenal at the end of last year and is starting out really good as well. So, you know, do you want to, how do you not feel like, man, I got jobs, so you could turn around and give that pile of money to somebody else? Like,
You know, I always wonder if the, like, the management of the Leafs, like, on the one hand, it's nice to get a whole lot of coverage because they do. They get an inordinate amount of coverage in Canada from the media. But on the other side, like, it's not always positive. And because the coverage, especially when Matthews was first hired and it was playing his first year, like, they just made him out to be the savior of the team, the golden boy, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, he's a good player and he has done a very nice job. But when you compare his stats to some of the other players in the league, Connor McDavid, and you look at what they're, the size of the dump truck full of money that they are wanting to, you know, dump in front of Austin Matthews in comparison to what he's actually done, that it doesn't quite balance out, at least not in my mind. And then you look at these guys, yes, it would be nice for all of them to be able to stick together and play together. But in terms of taking a quote unquote hometown discount, even if I didn't give that idea the side eye just to start with, I would super give it the side eye looking at the back end of that team, the defense and the goaltending. And I don't think that they necessarily have the defense and the goaltending to make them the kind of contender that they would need to be to really warrant a hometown discount. So I shrug my shoulders a little bit at all of that.
And if you are brand new to hockey, you're like, what is this hometown discount thing that they keep mentioning? It's not a thing. It's something that gets tossed around. It's basically saying if you want to play on this team, you need to take less money in order to stay on this team.
And actually, I don't want to say it's entirely not a thing because sometimes the...
Steven Stamkos did it. He took less money to stay at Tampa Bay.
Connor McDavid supposedly did it as well. And it's... But the thing is, in those cases, I don't remember it being characterized as a hometown discount. It was more, we need some more money to build a good team around this player in order to be able to compete. It wasn't like, we're the greatest team in the world and don't you want to play here, which is the way it seems to be spun.
That's how they're selling it in Toronto. Yeah, that's how they're selling it. Now, Steven Stamkos did take less money than he could have if he went elsewhere in order to keep that core together. So there was enough money to pay everybody to help them stay. You know, everybody's talking about what a great guy John Tavares is because he only took $11 million instead of $13 million so he could play in Toronto. And I think that's kind of skewing things a little bit. And I keep hearing, you know, who's going to take a haircut is another hockey term that keeps being thrown around with this. You know, like, I'm getting a haircut here. So, which is just basically who's taking less money. It was really interesting because Shanahan, when he played, it was pre-salary cap era. So he was making a truckload of money. They were all making a truckload of money. So he was making more money as a player than his players are making now. So it's a whole different thing. And as we have talked before, again, for our new hockey listeners, because there's some of you out there, the salary cap means there is only so much money that a club is or team is allowed to pay out total in salaries and bonuses. You cannot pay more than that. And right now, what is the salary cap? It's like $75 million. It goes up a little bit every year. That's total.
It's in the neighborhood. And that's total. Right. Yeah. For all of your players.
Right. That's like one NBA contract. You know? Like, hockey's not well paid compared to other sports. So when you talk about, you know, Connor McDavid taking how much? What was his contract last year?
13.5
Right. So
or was it? I think it was 12.5 He was the early rumors were over 13, and it ended up being 12.5
So it's, you know, you think about that, and he is supposedly the greatest hockey player, you know, of his generation, and you're thinking, what is an NBA player making, or what is a baseball player making? Like, what do those contracts look like for the same amount of games? Well, not really, because I think NBA and hockey are kind of similar, but and you'll hear a lot too that it's not the dollar amount, it's the percentage of the cap. And this comes up a lot because people will say, well, look at Sidney Crosby. You know, he's only making, I don't know, $8 million or something ridiculous. But at the time he signed that contract, it was a huge percentage of the cap. So it's kind of weird how hockey works when it comes to salaries, because you're thinking, you know, Crosby's won 3 cups for the Penguins. And his contract, you know, I'm sure there's bonuses and things attached to it, but... You know, he's not making as much money as some of these kids today who haven't done nearly as much, but
he's at, $10 million US dollars, according to Google, Google.
And but at the time, that was a massive contract, massive contract. So, yeah, this has been what's eating up Toronto media when they're not talking about how John Tavares has basically won the Stanley Cup already.
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much. I'm not going to complain because I have him on my fantasy hockey team. Did I tell you I'm playing it? I'm playing fantasy hockey.
Yes, I heard that through the grapevine, and it seems like you've actually found your match in fantasy hockey.
I cannot tell you how happy fantasy hockey is making me right now.
I would like to assure our listeners we are not going to become a fantasy hockey podcast.
Oh, because, God, no.
Because I don't care. However, I'm very happy that you have found something that like pushes your buttons, and I will stand your fantasy hockey team.
You can do that. But. I was really, really disappointed that there wasn't, because we're playing a Yahoo League, and this was started by one of the Beginner Puck listeners. Yay, team. And they played last year, and I wasn't involved in it last year, but this year they need another player. And I'm like, you know, I'll give this a go. And it has been an incredible amount of fun. I was so prepared for the draft. I so messed up the draft because it moved so fast. I didn't have time to consult on my spreadsheets that I had so carefully prepared. So yeah, it is a wild experience. And I kind of forget where I was going starting this, but it was interesting.
Yeah, if you are interested in sort of following along with the folks who are playing the fantasy team, if you are an Incomparable member, it is taking place, and there's a Beginner's Puck channel in the Incomparable members Slack. If you're not a member, go to theincomparable.com/members. You can check that out, see if you want to join.
And I do try to keep the fantasy talk down a little bit because not everybody there is playing. So it's really, and fantasy hockey, if you're not playing fantasy hockey, is so excruciatingly boring. It really is. I've listened to many and many NHL or SiriusXM NHL Network fantasy hockey programs where I just was like, I don't even care. I care a lot now, but I hear you. So we're trying to keep the talk down. What I was going to say was I was really disappointed that we're playing on the Yahoo site and it's a free, we're not doing the pay league, it's the free league. There wasn't enough spaces for the name that I wanted to call my team. It was so good, Erica.
Oh dear. Well, what did you have to give up?
It was a pun. It was a music pun.
What?
You'll appreciate this. Yes, because you know how much I hate puns, but
do.
I really wanted to call my team Owner of a Carter Heart.
Oh, now my heart is broken that you didn't get to call it that, because
I wasn't able to. Not enough spaces. Not enough spaces. It was perfect. I was in glee thinking about what I was going to call my team. Nope, didn't work.
Wow.
But yeah, so it has been fun. I can see how it can really eat your life, because you have to you can put as much time into it as you want, let's face it. Or you can set your rosters every day and match up who you're playing and try to create the good lines. And I actually put a player on waivers today and picked another player up. So it's a lot of fun. Would recommend. 10 out of 10. All right. So I can't complain about Tavares too much because I do have him on my fantasy team. But It's definitely, I can see the annoyance level coming out of Toronto, even as much as I enjoy watching them play. So speaking of enjoying watching them play, what is up with this international hockey? Like, what's going on? Why are we sending teams over to Europe? They're coming back all tired and jet lagged, and it's delaying the season. Mm-hmm. You guys haven't had a home opener yet in Edmonton. It's like, by the time you start, the season's going to be over.
Mm-hmm. It's weird. I mean, on the one hand, I think it's kind of fun to sort of showcase NHL elsewhere in the world, because NHL hockey is different from international hockey. But at the same time, you're showcasing it in international rinks. So you're playing on bigger ice, because international hockey uses ice that is not the same size as NHL rinks. And, you know, the difference is really mostly in the style of play. And do we really need to grow the game in Sweden? I'm pretty sure Sweden knows about hockey.
Yeah. And the whole thing, see, this is the thing that chaps my cheese, because they wouldn't let the NHL players play in the Olympics last year. And on one hand, I understand that, because do you really want to interrupt your season? Do you want to risk your best players getting injured in mm-hmm. something that's not going to benefit your team? Yeah. But it was, now they have this whole thing, well, it's for the exposure. We're going to send teams to China and play games in China, which I understand China, because they're really That's trying true. To get into that market, even though we wouldn't send teams to Korea to play in the Olympics, which is, you know, mm-hmm. kind of close to China. But again, they play games in Germany and mm-hmm. was it Switzerland they played a game this year? I don't, like, these are countries that we get NHL players from. They are aware of hockey. They understand hockey. And then, I don't even remember which Yahoo it was, talking head, was saying, wouldn't it be great if we had NHL teams in Europe that would compete? Like, it would just be this worldwide NHL league. I'm like, no, that's stupid. Like, the travel alone mm-hmm. would kill your players. I mean, you think about how exhausting it is to get the West Coast players to the East Coast and vice exactly. versa. Mm-hmm. Like, can you imagine adding, like, international time changes and things onto that?
No. No.
Let's not do that.
I know. I really am. I'm feeling a little bit extra salty about this, because my Oilers are one of the teams that went across. And I have to say, I really did enjoy the game that they played in Cologne, Germany, which was, it was not even a preseason game. It was simply an exhibition game, because they actually played against the Cologne Sharks, which is mm-hmm. a team in the German league. And it was a team coached by Leon Draisaitl's father. And Leon Draisaitl is one of the Oilers' players. So, you know, there's like this, you know, familial rivalry, and he got to play in his hometown. So that was kind of a neat thing. I don't know if it was entirely warranted, but I'm glad it happened, because I enjoyed it. And then their actual first game of the year was against the New Jersey Devils in Sweden. And in a building called the Scandinavium, which I think is the coolest. That's a great name.
Was it Sweden or Switzerland?
It was in Sweden.
Was it? Okay.
Yep. And yeah, they sucked. And I mean, I guess I can't entirely blame Sweden for that. My headcanon, my theory is that Leon Draisaitl took the entire team out drinking in his hometown of Cologne after their game, and got them so wasted that even days later, when they were playing in Sweden,
oh my God,
they were missing a step. That's probably not actually the truth, but I like to tell myself that that's what it was, because at least that means they got a really great night out. I don't know.
Yeah, man,
it's weird. And yes, and they. In order to sort of slowly reintroduce them to U.S. time zones, they are then coming back and having several more games on the road, starting on the East Coast, and slowly will make their way back to Mountain Time. And Edmonton's home opener will not be until October 18th, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah.
They are just going to be like ground up by the time they finally get home.
Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that doesn't, you know, get like dull their spirits too much. I mean, and they're tough games. They're on the road. They're against tough, mm-hmm. tough teams. And so, you know, I think in a way it's kind of a good thing, because people, at least here, are not expecting super great things from them out of the gate, because they're just fighting an uphill battle. So I'm hoping that the media won't like tap dance on their grave too early, and then they'll have a chance to get back here, get some rest and some energizing, and rebound from that and come back.
Yeah, that's rough. I mean, road trips are tough to begin with. So it's almost like, you know, are you setting them up to have this really early disappointment? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, what is this going to do if they come out here? They're still kind of tired. They still haven't been home. When's the last time they were home? And, you know, they're playing in, well, is there any division that's not tough these days? I mean, let's face it.
Well, no. No.
I mean, parity's been has done its job.
Even the teams that were supposed to lose, like Vancouver, has won a couple of games.
And Ottawa, Buffalo, and Montreal. Come on, what's happening up there? Mm-hmm. Yeah, really.
So, I mean, the first couple of weeks of the season, I don't really give a whole lot of credence to what's happening. But at the same time, that means that any team you play could be a really hard team, even when you're not expecting it. Which, you know, sort of adds insult to injury sometimes.
I know. It's true. There has been so much hype around how bad certain teams are going to be. It is a little weird. It's like the teams hasn't sunk in. They're supposed to be bad yet.
Yep.
I don't know. They start reading their own press and realize, whoops, maybe we need to stop winning. I don't know. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I it was fun watching because some of those games were aired like in the morning on the East Coast. There was like one morning I got up before work and I'm like, you know, having coffee and a bagel watching hockey. I love morning hockey. I wish they aired more international hockey in the U.S.
Too.
So you could do that and not have to like have a janky stream someplace, but actually, you know, aired it on the NHL Network or something because it was really delightful to have that experience, as opposed to, you know, staying up until 1 o'clock in the morning to watch the Flyers play Vegas it was, you know, didn't start until 10 o'clock. And
I guess it
wasn't quite one. Yeah. But by the time we added the post game into it, you know, it was a really late night. And that's, I understand why. I mean, I'm not complaining too much, but daytime hockey's good. Morning hockey's nice. I like it.
Yep. I was actually homesick from work the day that Edmonton played in Cologne. So I was able to watch that exhibition game, and it was great fun.
Isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's like such a treat. I don't know. Daytime hockey is crazy. It's a whole different beast.
Yep.
But, well, we've got a roster set. Season has opened, but, you know, a couple things happened. I did get a chance to go to training camp for the Flyers, it was so much fun, Erica. It really was. There's so much hope and fear and panic and, get an eye on the kids that you don't get a chance to see. I mean, especially the ones that you know aren't going to make the roster. And we had Morgan Frost up, and you know, some of the draftees from this year had a chance to come out and play a little bit. And you know, it's always fun watching Carter Hart in goal because he honestly is our goalie savior of the future. I had a chance to actually meet face to face Mary Clark, who I've been Twitter friends for a while. So
I am jealous.
I know, formerly of SB Nation, now with the Athletic. And so it was really nice because, you know, we've been Twitter friends for a long time, and I really would love to get her on the podcast because she's so, so hockey smart and just has great insights and writes really fabulous pieces for the Athletic. And I think, she does great narrative pieces. We have a fantastic guy in the Athletic in Philadelphia, Charlie O'Connor, who can break down a stat like nobody's business. He can flay that sucker like the Salt Bay. But, you know, sometimes I like the story. You know, there's more to the game than just the numbers. And she is so good at bringing that other bit in. So I'd like to get her on sometime. Yeah. But it's fun to watch a roster come together. So I thought for this episode's What the Puck, we do something a little bit different and call it How the Puck.
How the puck
do you build a roster? What do you think? Should we talk about roster building?
Yeah, I think now is a great time to learn a little bit more about hockey. So Deb, how the puck do you build a roster?
We're stumbling over our taglines.
Yeah, wow.
Yes, it is time for How the Puck. Mm-hmm. Hockey things that everyone knows. We all have to learn sometime, right? Okay. So the thing is, when you start the season, you have to have 23 players on your roster. That's it. You get 23. So you have to figure out, of course, you have to have two goalies because they're like glass. And if you don't have two of them, then you're done because they're going to get hurt. We've already got one out. We picked up another spare just because we've got goalies coming off the rafters, but none of them can actually play here in Philadelphia. But, you know, you have to have a mix of, you know, defensemen and left wingers and right wingers and centers. And you have to have build all of these pieces together to build your perfect team. So how do you do that? So you have a training camp, which is, you know, a tryout sort of, and there's a big groups of people that come to a training camp. So you have your players that are under contract, and those are players that played for your team last year who are under your NHL contracts or under who play on your AHL team. And sometimes your ECHL team, you might bring those guys up too because they're all battling for the spots. And depending on how your GM likes to run his team, it may be they're battling for one or two spots, or they may throw their hands up in the air and say, every spot's at risk. Everybody's got to earn it. It depends on their philosophy. Mm-hmm. But there's also other groups that can come. Like I said, it was fun watching our kids come up to play. So you have all of your, not all of them, you invite the kids that you've drafted that you want to see, that you think has the potential to make the NHL. And sometimes their kids, maybe you want to develop a little bit more, or you want them kind of put on the right place, the right path. And sometimes it's players that you legitimately think have a shot at making the roster. Last year, Nolan Patrick came up. He was our first draft pick at number two. The expectation was he was going to be able to play in the NHL. And then there's two other classifications of players that come. You have your amateur tryout players, and those are players who have not been drafted or maybe are in college, have not been drafted, that you think have potential and you want to kind of give them another look. So you invite them to camp. And then you have PTOs. Those are ATOs. And then you have PTOs, which are professional tryouts, who are professional hockey players who do not have a contract. So it's interesting to see this mix of really established, confident players, really scared 18-year-old kids who this is the first time they've been on NHL, you know, like ice with NHL players. And it is fascinating the chemistry that happens over the course of a training camp. Have you had a chance to go to any training camps?
Not this year. I did a few years back, and yeah, it was fun. I was able to watch some of the early games and like the split squad stuff, where, you know, the Oilers will take half of their team and send them to Calgary, and Calgary takes half their team and sends them to Edmonton, and then they have little games to see how that works. And yeah, it's interesting too, because when you get some of the more veteran players who, you know, sometimes they, even in the early games, sometimes they'll put out guys who they know they're on the team, so they don't have to play real hard for anything, playing right alongside a guy who might be on the bubble. Like, you know, he was maybe in the AHL last year, and there's a chance that he's going to make it to the big show this year, and he is just playing his heart out. And you just see sort of different levels of effort. And then, you know, there's a very fine line between playing so hard that you're reckless and you look like an idiot, and playing not hard enough to actually make the team. And it's delightful to watch that play out and see what happens.
We talked about that when we talked about the rookie games, which is my hockey tidbit last time, you know, the effort these kids put into during the rookie games. And another thing that they really work on is chemistry. So that's an elusive thing that two players, they connect really well. They communicate really well on the ice. The passes are always touching sticks. You know what I mean? Like, they can find each other on the ice really well, or they have a compatible playing style or a complementary playing style. And it's not something that can really be taught. It kind of has to be. You kind of have to develop it through practice. But sometimes it just clicks, like players will click in training camp. So that's something that you'll have a coach that will really mix things up. They'll mix lines up. And I know in our training camp, we do a designated color jersey. So usually the orange jerseys are like the first line. They're like your top players, and who's going to play with Claude Giroux, and who's going to play with Sean Couturier? You know, who's going to be on the other wing? And that position changed around a lot during the course of our training camp, because it kept, you know, what's going to stick? What's going to really work? Let's give this kid a shot up here to see what that looks like. Everybody was really high on Morgan Frost at the beginning of training camp, and his sort of cachet fell as the training camp progressed, and his color jersey kept changing as he went down the line. Aww. And, it wasn't that he was playing poorly. It was just, Here's an 18-year-old kid. He wasn't drafted high enough to think that he is going to make the NHL in his first year. Do you know what I mean? Right. But there's always a surprise, and that's the kind of thing that coaches live for. Who's going to surprise me at training camp? Mm-hmm. So then what happens is you'll come up with your roster by the date, and I think it was October 2nd this year, October 2nd or 3rd, you have to submit your roster to the powers that be in Toronto, and that is your opening mm-hmm. day roster. Now, you can still play with that a little bit. Now, this is not something that we do in Philadelphia, but it's a GM decision. But I know that Chiarelli does this in Edmonton, is he will give players a little bit of a tryout sometimes. He did it with Kyler Yamamoto last year.
That's actually a pretty common thing. A lot of teams will, mm-hmm. you can have your young guys play for 9 games.
Right.
Once they have played their 10th game, then they are officially an NHL player, and you have burned 1 year of their entry-level contract.
Right.
So
at that point, you have to sign them for their entry-level contract, which is only good for 3 years.
Yep. So, if somebody's not quite ripe yet, you don't want to be paying them an NHL salary for an entire year. So you'll give them 9 games. And I think that this is a good thing because, and I've really noticed it this year for some teams, the difference between playing a preseason game and playing an actual NHL regular season game that counts, mm-hmm. it's like night and day. So it's all well and good for some coaches to be like, well, if they're not ready, they're not ready. I'm just going to send them down. Or, hey, this guy's totally ready. He gets to be in the team all year. And then what can happen is that the first actual game of the season completely changes the tenor of what happens with some of those, especially with the newer players, and in a different way with the older players. There are a number of players in the Edmonton Oilers who, it's not like they're not trying during the preseason, but when you see them on the ice for the first real game of the season, even if that game doesn't go real well, like it didn't for us, the level of effort and just the energy is high, like way different than it was during the preseason. And that shift sometimes is enough to throw some of the younger players off of their game because, they're doing amazing in preseason and they're thinking, yes, I've got this. And maybe the coach is thinking, wow, this kid has surprised me. I guess he's ready for the big time. And as soon as you have that switch and the game matters, this happened last year with Kyler Yamamoto, whom I love and I look forward to watching his career. But he looked great in preseason last year, and they tried to give him that 9-game tryout. Many people were rooting for him to actually make it and stay in all season last year, and he just sort of fizzled out once the real spotlights were on. And it's still too early to call, but I suspect that might be happening to Yamo again this year because he was kind of a non-entity in our first game. But there's a lot of the team that sort of felt a little bit like a non-entity, so I'm withholding judgment, but I'm firmly on the side of giving young players the 9-game tryout and not just deciding that they belong on the roster for the entirety of the year, because that can absolutely bite you in the butt. I can't imagine how screwed the Oilers would have been. They would have been more screwed last year than they already were if those young players who were getting that tryout that looked like they should have been there would have stuck around for longer than those few games, because
Now see, I have been completely switched over to the reverse opinion, because I think that if you're doing your job, you can estimate whether a player is going to be able to handle the NHL. If you're a good coach and you've got good staff, you can look at a player and say, okay, it may be rocky in the beginning, but if I pull this player up and give him the shot, he's going to be able to develop into that. But if I send him back down, he is not going to be able to have the level of competition that's going to develop his play. And then part of the game, there's as much mental that goes into the game as mm-hmm. physical, and the back and forth. Yes, oh my gosh, I was up, but I wasn't good enough to stay. Now I'm back. You know what I mean? Like, that can affect a player's development as well. To not have the confidence in the faith of your coach, because it's basically we're not rooting for you. We're rooting for you to win, but if you screw up, we're yanking you back and not giving you the option to grow into your game. And Ivan Provorov is one of those players that everybody thought he was ready out the gate. He had a disastrous few games. And if the coach had looked at that and said, in the beginning, he didn't have his feet quite under him. Mm-hmm. If they had pulled him after 9 games and sent him back, he ended up developing into an amazing player by the end of that year. His first couple games were rough, not going to lie. There was one game against Chicago that it was abysmal. Like, if you looked at him, you're like, why is this kid even here? And he turned into an amazing defenseman. So, and I think mentally, the fact that the coach had the confidence in him that he was going to stay helped him make that next step. Not, well, you got to go cook a little bit longer. So Ron Hextall is more of like, let them cook down where they need to cook, and then we'll bring them up when we feel they're ready. And if we feel they're ready, they're ready. And
I think the Oilers we've been burned by that so many times. There have been a lot of times, this is like a thing in this town, don't bring the players up too early, because we've had so many that it's been like, yeah, bring them up and we're going to trust them through the right. year to develop, and they don't.
Well, that's what you don't see many first year players on the Flyers ever. I mean, it's really unusual. Like, we just have a GM that feels like they need the time. You do not know how Philadelphia fans are clamoring to get Carter Hart on our roster. He was the best goaltender in Major Junior Hockey League. How many awards did he win in Canada? And they're saying, he's ready, put him up. And Hextall's like, no, there's more that goes into your first year in the NHL than, are you a good player? You're living on your own for the first time. You're not with a billet family. You have to deal with this adult thing. Mm-hmm. You have to deal with the mental preparedness that goes into playing for the NHL. You have to deal with real life stuff of playing in the NHL. Like, give him that year to develop, to get all of this under his feet. So when he comes up, and if he's ready next year, he's going to be that much stronger, that much better. So he just has this, he doesn't bring guys up readily. I mean, I think Nolan Patrick was the first rookie that he brought up, like, since I've started paying attention, to mm-hmm. hockey. Like that, and that was on the fence. Like, there was some real question as to whether he was going to let him come up. So I just think it's his style. Like, he really, like, when you come up to the NHL level, like, there's confidence in you. And I think that gives players more fight to them. Do you know what I mean? It's like that they have that belief behind them, not like, let's see what you can do. But like you said, it's a whole different, it's a management style. And I don't know that one way is right, one way is wrong, but it's certainly a different sort of approach to it. But I know that there are fans in Philadelphia that are literally going to drive to Lehigh Valley and kidnap Carter Hart and take him to Wells Fargo and put him on the ice.
Well, this doesn't work for goalies, but the other thing to sort of take into consideration, it sort of depends on the position that you play on the team, is if you want to give a younger player, you want to help them develop in the NHL, they need to be able to play enough game minutes in the NHL right. to actually get that development.
Exactly.
And if you're like a third line, D pairing, probably mm-hmm. you're not going to be playing very many games, or you're not going to be playing very minutes per game. So you really may not get the amount of development that you get if you played on a good AHL team, where you are actually getting like first line minutes. So you would have some practice against, players who are not NHL level, but who are not that far below. You're still playing professional hockey. So that's another sort of consideration to bring into it, which is one of the reasons that the Edmonton Oilers, we're not entirely sure what's going to happen with our first round draft pick from this year, Evan Bouchard, because he's really, really good. The guy looks like he's like 40 years old. He plays kind of like he's 40 years old in some ways. Like he has a real maturity about some choices, specifically in the offensive zone. He could use some cooking in the defensive zone. But due to wacky shenanigans, which I don't entirely understand, if they decide to send him back down, he doesn't get to play in the AHL against, you know, professional level hockey players. He has to go back to the Canadian Hockey League and play against, you know, that's a significant step down in the sort of quality of opponents. And there's been a lot of chatter in Edmonton about whether it's worth sending him down because there's not a lot of there's not a lot of development happening, even if he gets to play, many minutes per game.
Yeah, we had a situation this year where a better player was sent back to juniors and a less talented player was kept on the roster for that very reason. It was like, yes, he was better than the player they kept, but the decision was, I don't want him to sit in the press box. Mm-hmm. Because if he's not, or if he's going to be a healthy scratch, because we need to, we don't want him to be down on the fourth line. We don't want him to be in the press box as a scratch. We want him to be playing as much hockey as he possibly can. So there's a lot of that decision making that goes in, and the wild shenanigans that you were talking about. Because I look this up, there was an agreement in 1995 between the NHL. And the Canadian Hockey League, because apparently they had changed the draft age from like 20 to 18 or something, or I don't know. There was something going on with the debate on the draft age. And basically the agreement is because when you're taking a player from major juniors and you're taking an asset away from them. I mean, even though it's, we're all one big happy family, we're developing players that are going to be drafted at the NHL, there is money being made in Canadian Hockey League. You know, there's tickets are selling to those major junior games. It is a profit. In fact, wasn't there a lawsuit about how much money was being made a while back?
Rings a bell.
Yeah, there was a lawsuit because there was some shenanigans going on at how much money Canadian Hockey League was actually making compared to, like, the stipends they were given players, and was it exploitation or something like that. So you're removing an asset from their lineup, and the agreement was made that if a player was still within the age limit of playing for major juniors, which is up to 20, then if you were not going to use him, you had to give him back. Mm-hmm. Now, if they age out of major juniors at 20, which is what happened with Carter Hart, at that point, you can then send them to your AHL team. You're not burning your entry-level contracts and all that other whatever, that year thing that kicks in. So, actually, I might have to go back to that just to confirm that, so don't take that as gospel. But I do know that if they are under 20, they have to go back to the major juniors. So the major juniors, Canadian Hockey League, is not losing that asset. Now, you said, it screws up Evan Bouchard, because here's a player who could play at a much higher level than that. But them's the rules. So what do you do, at that point? Because he's not going to – is he good enough to play and get enough minutes to develop in Edmonton? Because you're going to have to keep him there till he's 20.
Or do you send him down? And from what I understand, London is going to be a real contender this year. But even so, I mean, if it's just London beating up on a bunch of other teams, then that means that Bouchard's going to be focusing on his offensive game, because he's a very offensive defensive player. Mm-hmm. And, when you have a team in front of you that's kind of weaker than you are, which I hear a lot of the CHL teams are, then sure, use the offensive defenseman to work on scoring points and that sort of thing. And that's really not the skill that he needs to develop in order to succeed in the NHL. He needs to work on his defensive game, his game in the zone, making split second decisions about what to do, who to pass to, that kind of thing. And I'm not convinced that he's going to get that kind of practice if he is down in London. So, I'm glad that I am not the coach and that I am not in the position to have to make that call.
Yeah, me too. It's rough. I mean, I can see, like I said, I'm sympathetic to people who who want these players in, who think they can offer something. But I'm also sympathetic to the fact, as you know, the mother of someone who has children this age, thinking, you know, I remember when they went off to their first year of college, and there was a really, really funny bit. It might have been the Road to the Winter Classic, or one of the little, you know, teams do videos. They do like a little video series of like meet the player, go to his house or whatever. And there was one with Brady Shea. I think it was Brady Shea and Jimmy Vesey playing for the New York Rangers. Like two kids, like they were just shoving their dirty laundry like in a closet and hoping their mothers would come and visit, you know. And jeez, they had ketchup in their refrigerator and like an empty pizza box or something ridiculous. I mean, these are children that need to learn how to adult as well as be professional hockey players. And that's a lot. Let's face it. We're adults. Some days it's a lot to do, as well as having the pressure of being a professional athlete on top of that. So I am sympathetic to the idea of let them cook. Just let them live a little bit until they can get their feet under them. And they'll just be better human beings in the long run, right?
Yeah.
And you won't mess with their heads as much. I don't know. Evan Bouchard's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Yeah, he is. I mean, if they had the opportunity to send him down to the AHL, I would say absolutely that seems like a really smart call, just based on what we've seen from him in the preseason and like the one game he's played. Yeah, AHL would be great. He could get some good minutes. He could get some practice. I'm not convinced that that's the case if he goes to London, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. So expect in the next couple weeks, lots of waivers, lots of movement still, because while the rosters are solidified, there's injuries to contend with. There's going to be players placed on waiver. In fact, Toronto put two players on waiver right before the start of their season, two of their goaltenders, which was a shock, and they both got picked up off of waivers. Now, if you're interested in how waivers work in particular, in episode 15, we talked about the explanation for waivers. But here's something I didn't know, because I hadn't seen it happen. So Vancouver put Sam Gagne on waivers, and he's got a pretty hefty contract, and he was signed last year. So I guess this is part of their, we're cleaning house, we're doing everything. He did not go to the Vancouver Canucks AHL team. They loaned him to the Toronto Marlies, which was actually a really nice thing to do, because Sam Gagne is from Toronto. His family lives in Toronto off season. That's where his family's from. So knowing that he can still be called up to play for Vancouver, but he's not playing for Vancouver's AHL team. He's playing for the Toronto's AHL team, which is just, you know, if you're going to put a player like that on waivers anyway, which is kind of a kick in the head, you know, to be able to have him be close to home, it kind of was a nice thing to do. I was a little impressed, actually. Mm-hmm. But Toronto put two of their goaltenders on waiver. One was Curtis McElhinney, who was their backup last year, because they brought Garrett Sparks up from their AHL team. They felt he had earned that spot, and he got picked up by Carolina, and he's already won a couple games for them. And the Flyers picked up Calvin Pickard, who I thought you had fond feelings for at one point.
That name doesn't sound familiar, but
no,
it's possible.
Maybe I'm wrong. He was picked up by during the expansion draft by Vegas, and then got traded. And here's the thing. We currently have one of our goaltenders is on injured reserve. And I guess we're holding on to Calvin Pickard as sort of insurance in case anything happens to Elliot. If we put Curtis McElhinney back on waivers and don't put him on our roster, he cannot go back. The Toronto Maple Leafs have the right to claim him back off waivers first before he goes back on our, we have to send him back. Like, we can't send him to our AHL team. Apparently you cannot claim a player off of waivers to put them on your AHL team. You have to play them in your roster.
That makes sense. Totally makes sense.
That. I didn't know that. See, all these, I need to read the CBA more. the rules are so complicated. So yeah, so there'll be lots of, the movement hasn't stopped, especially for those teams that do use that nine game tryout system. You're going to see a lot of players moving up and down, just you know, giving the kids a shot and seeing what happens. And, you know, they may stick, they may not. So you think Yamamoto is going to be bumped back down?
I wouldn't be surprised either way. I'll say that. Like I said, the beginning, this is a really, really sucky year for the Oilers to use that the 9-game tryout sort of thing. Because as we discussed, the beginning of this season for the Oilers is just grueling and sucky. So I can't imagine anybody is going to be playing at their best. It's not really an opportunity to showcase what you can do at your best because you're going to be groggy and jet lagged. But on the other hand, you know, those young kids probably bounce back from jet lag quicker than some of the older fellows do. So maybe they'll have a little extra jump in their step. I don't know. So I'm just holding my breath and kind of waiting to see what happens. But yeah, I mean, he hasn't been playing poorly. He looked amazing in preseason, but yeah, the first game was not stellar, but again, it was not stellar for the entire team. Like, I am not used to watching the Edmonton Oilers and thinking they're the slow team.
Ooh.
And
oof.
They were.
Oof.
They really were. Like, it just looked like they were lumbering along in comparison to the Devils, who I don't see the Devils play all that much because they are in a different conference. And I guess my thoughts about them are not that they're like a particularly fast team. Maybe they are and I just missed it. But boy, in comparison, they were just like skating rings around us.
Everything's getting faster these days, Erica. Every single team is building on speed.
Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, Connor McDavid still looked faster than anybody, but that's just like the sky is blue.
You can be fast, but man, you still got to win games, right?
Yep.
That's what it all comes down to. I know. It's just I hope they get their act together. They're too good on paper not to do well.
Yep. And I think the chemistry thing is a big part of it. You mentioned chemistry before. And last year the Oilers was really just like the lines were a blender. Just, mm-hmm. You know, this doesn't seem to be working. Let's change it out. And even Connor McDavid in an interview was saying something about how he never really got the chance or that there was a lot of changing and it would be nice to see some stability, you know, on the lines. So I am hoping that that the preseason line that was actually the very end of last season's line, which was Connor McDavid with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins on the left wing and Ty Ratty on the right wing. I hope that they don't give up on that if it doesn't seem to be working at the beginning of the season. Because again, it's a tough beginning of the season. They had great chemistry at the end of last year. They had amazing chemistry during the preseason. Ty Ratty, a guy I had not heard of before last year, led scoring in the preseason, like for the entire NHL.
I know. I put him on my fantasy team just on that alone. I have hopes for you, Ty Ratty, because Jeff Skinner's let me down. And I'm never talking about fantasy hockey again on this podcast. So.
I don't believe that. It's okay. You can bring it up a little bit. But
oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. So, yeah, that's basically how a roster's built. And for some teams, it's not set yet. So it'll be a little more fluid. So don't be surprised if you see a little bit of movement, but that's how the cake is made. Now the frosting just needs to be applied.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Erica, how about a hockey tidbit to close us out? Do you have something fun that we can chat about?
I do. My hockey tidbit ties back into what we were talking about earlier with these games in Europe, European games. And I had, just as I said, I got to watch the exhibition game in Cologne between the Oilers and the Cologne Sharks. I'm still a little baffled by why Cologne has sharks as their mascot. Like, I didn't realize they were a, you know, coastal town. So that just made me laugh that they had a shark. But the audience there, first of all, it's the biggest arena certainly in Germany. It was like 18,500 seats, I believe, and it was a sellout. And it was really, really interesting watching that crowd because it was almost more like watching a European soccer game than it was watching a hockey game in terms of the way that the crowd was involved. They were singing and chanting the whole time. And in most, I think, of of the hockey arena, people were standing through the entire game. Like at the beginning, I was like, oh, this looks like fun. I would like to go to a game there and experience something like this. And then when I realized how many people were standing up the whole game, I was like, nope, I am out. I do not want to have to stand to watch the game. That's terrible from an accessibility standpoint. But it was still cool to just hear the sound of the constant arena and the chanting, and their goal song was something that the crowd could like sing along with. Mm. And their singing would continue sort of like even sometimes after the goal song was done playing. And just the level of involvement that everybody had in the crowd with the game was delightful. It was just delightful.
That does sound cool. Very yeah. cool. And does sound very soccerish, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. Because Stephen, my spouse, likes to watch sports all the time, even if it's not a sport he cares that much about. So we have soccer on a lot during the afternoons in the summertime. And yeah, it always amazes me that even though there's not a lot happening on the soccer field, the crowd doesn't care. They are just chanting and singing, and that's what this felt like.
Speaking of soccer, and I'm just going to touch on this briefly because we will be discussing this in our next podcast. I was at the Philadelphia Union game, which I'm a season ticket holder, and we had a new mascot introduced, Fang, P-H-A-N-G, mind you, which is a snake with arms and legs, which in my opinion makes it a salamander.
Yeah, that's not a snake.
Not a snake. Even though there's this cute backstory about how a snake wanted to play soccer so badly, he grew arms and legs. A little kid came up with that. I'm like, oh, all right. but Fang had a special guest at the game, and this was a game where if they won this, they clinched the playoffs, a playoff spot. So it was kind of an important game. Fang had a special guest, and Gritty, the Flyers' new mascot, showed up. And let me tell you, Fang walked on the field. Everybody's like, oh. It's Fang. Gritty walked into the arena. The crowd lost its cheese. So I just want to drop that into a little soccer tidbit because we will be talking about Gritty on our next podcast because it will be after the Flyers home opener and Gritty's official debut during an in-season game, not a preseason game like he was at before, but his first pro in-season NHL appearance.
Exciting. Yes. Hashtag teaser.
Yes. So you have been listening to Beginner's Puck. And remember, hockey is for everyone, especially for you.
Beginner's Puck is a Castria production for the Incomparable Network. Our catchy theme tune is Ephemeral by Sunspot. Have a hockey question you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming episode? Reach out to us on Twitter at BeginnersPuck or email us at BeginnersPuck@gmail.com. And you can find all of our great show notes at TheIncomparable.com/puck.